Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti, text 41.
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurtesva
Keshume Sneha Pasham Imam Chinti Dhridam Pandushu Vrishnishu. Vishvaisha, O Lord of the universe. Vishvatman,
O soul of the
universe. Vishvamurte, O personality in universal form. Sakeshu, unto my own kinsmen. May,
by.
Sneha Pasham, tie of affection. Imam, this. Chinti, cut off. Dhritam, deep. Pandushu, for the Pandavas. Vrishnishu, for the Vrishnis
also.
Translation. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Vrishnis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both families. Both families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas. But by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belong to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes. But for the benefit of the mass of population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord,
out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. Om Agena Chimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasman Shri Gurave Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Buddha Bhavanda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasani Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you are in the middle of Queen Kunti Devi's appeal to Krishna. You can't go now. Everything may seem all right. And for a normal person, from the material point of view, when they see everything is fine in the material world, they forget all about their devotion to God. But Kunti Devi is very poetically and authoritatively establishing to Krishna, everything is not fine. We're not ready for you to go. Look around. The battle of Kurukshetra is finished. The inimical kings who are against us, they're dead, but their sons and grandsons are still alive. In other words, there's still danger. No matter how you look at the situation, Krishna, we still need you here. And then she pointed out how, by the personal presence of Krishna, everything is auspicious and prospering. By his feet, the touch of his feet on the earth becomes so blessed. And by his glance over nature, the supplies of nature are in abundance. How can Krishna go? Look at all that he's doing. And then she gives the example that just as the name and fame of the body disappear when the body is finished, similarly, when Krishna goes, what will be the vitality that's left in the situation? Now she's making an appeal to Krishna in terms of his status in the universe, in connection to the universe. Of course, that is a supreme display of Krishna's yoga ability. Yogeshra, the master of all mystic power, means that Krishna can appear in this world without being touched by it. He can act in this world without being connected to it. And although he is Vishvatma, the soul of the universe, although he's Vishvesha, the lord of the universe, and although he's Vishvamurti, the personality of universal form, nevertheless, he still has a personal connection with every devotee. So she wants to establish that the personal connection is not just with her because she's Krishna's aunt. She wants to establish that Krishna is impartial, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu. Yet even though he's equal to everyone, he favors his devotee, and that's not being partial, because everyone has a chance to be a devotee. So here she's presenting two things that are apparently in conflict. Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, personality of the form of the universe, yet you're personally related to me. It is not like because you have universal affairs in this one tiny universe that you forget your devotees. And therefore, I am personally appealing to you. When there were rumors that the Pandavas had died along with their mother in a fire set by Duryodhana and his cronies, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago. Then there were counter rumors that the Pandavas and Kunti had been sighted. So Krishna himself decided to go investigate the rumors. Although he is omniscient, still, in his Naralila, in his human-like pastimes, he decided, let me go see the truth about my dear friends, my dear relatives, the Pandavas. So he set off for Hastinapur without even an invitation, without telling anyone he's coming. This is the relationship between Krishna and the Pandavas and Kunti Devi. He just arrived at their doorstep, literally. They never knew he was coming. And when they saw Krishna, the Bhagavatam describes, it was like the life returning to a dead body. It's like all their senses had been sleeping and suddenly the senses became alive. Krishna has come unexpectedly. He's here. And the Pandavas greeted Krishna according to their age. The younger ones bowed down to him, Nakul, Sahadev. The equals, like Arjuna, embraced him. And Krishna bowed down to the elders, like Yudhisthira. The Shastra describes that by the embrace of Krishna, by the touch of Krishna, all the material contamination of the Pandavas disappeared. So you might question, the Pandavas have material contamination? How could that be so? But Jiva Goswami explains that the deep meaning is that by the touch of Krishna, they lost all the pain of separation from Krishna. And of course, that pain of separation from Krishna is not material. It is a form of ecstasy. But in any case, by the touch of Krishna, that all went away. While the Pandavas were greeting Krishna, Krishna looks up and he sees his aunt, Kunti Devi, eagerly coming toward him. So Krishna, because that's his aunt, he gets up. And he goes toward her and he bows down, touches her feet. This is Kunti Devi. And she embraces Krishna with tears in her eyes, smelling his head, Vedic sign of affection. And she begins to assert to Krishna how she knows that he's always thinking of the Pandavas. She knows that he's never forgotten them. She said, the first thing is that when we were in trouble, you sent Akrura to inquire about us. When you did that, I became convinced without a doubt that no matter what we'll go through, you are always with us. This expression of gratitude and confidence is very important for a devotee. Instead of always looking to see, oh, why has Krishna neglected me? Why have I not gotten this? Why have I not gotten that? Why is this missing and that missing? Instead, if we look and see how Krishna is favoring us, even in an apparently small way, our heart becomes soft, and that way we can better appreciate the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you might wonder, why did Kunti Devi pick this one event out of all the things that happened in their jam-packed life? The Pandavas going through this, that, everything, up, down, and all around. Yet Kunti Devi seizes upon this. You sent Akrura to ask about us. This is a devotee. And by that action, I knew you care. But then she wanted to establish, just as he's doing in this verse, that even though you particularly care for those who always think of you, nevertheless, you still are impartial. Everyone has the chance to always think of you. It's natural that a mother is especially attached to a dependent child. In my family, I can see
As the oldest child, my mother said, I put everything I had into you, the firstborn. But then I also see she's attached to her youngest son. Oh, but he's my baby. So dependency brings about special flavors. That's quite interesting because in material life, as Prabhupada explains a few purports earlier, to be dependent is considered an undesirable thing. to be dependent on the social benefit or to be dependent on others. Modern psychologists have coined a pop psychological term, codependency in a relationship. Watch out when your whole life becomes so bound up in someone else that you can't think for yourself, you can't function, you've lost your identity. It's codependency. So, atheistic persons accuse that that's what spiritual life does. It makes you codependent on a mythology. And you lose your ability to carve out your own life and forge ahead. In fact, during our retreats with young Indian overseas students and professionals, we often have to deal again and again with a fear that if I proceed on the path of bhakti, I'll lose my competitiveness at the university and in the workplace. The bhakti will make me very weak and dependent, and I'll lose that aggressiveness, that killer instinct necessary for succeeding in the world. This is a fear that's in the back of most of their minds. This notion that spiritual life puts you in a position of dependency, and in that way you become dull and lifeless. But you look at the Pandavas and they are the epitome of action. Yet they are fully dependent on Krishna. And so Kunti Devi is pointing out, this dependency is actually sweet and it actually brings you more attention from Krishna. And that's natural. And everyone has the opportunity to increase their dependency on Krishna by thinking of Krishna. And that way, everyone has the opportunity to be favored personally by Krishna. Even though, as this verse says, he's the Lord of the universe, the soul of the universe, the personality of the form of the universe. So now, after her presenting all the havoc that will be caused if Krishna departs, this is her bhava. Krishna, you can't go. Everything's going to go wrong if you leave. That's her vision of based on love of Krishna. Now she's asking for a benediction. But the kind of benediction that she's asking for reminds us of Prahlad Maharaj when Lord Nrisingadev said, Prahlad, ask for me any benediction you want. And Prahlad pointed out, my dear Lord, remember my family background. I come from a line of demons. Please don't tempt me with material propositions, offers of material benedictions. You know my family history. But if I indeed ask for a benediction, please make it so that I'm always your unconditional servant, rendering pure devotional service. You might accuse Lord Nrisingadeva entrapping Prahlad. It's a legal term we've explained before. Entrapment, when the police want to catch a crim, a drug dealer or something, and they have an undercover agent who tries to initiate a drug deal, and if the undercover agent pushes the person too much, come on, you really want to buy this. This is really a great deal. Come on, you can't refuse. Come on. And the person, all right, here's the money. Ah, now you're under arrest. At least in the USA, that the defense lawyers can argue, entrapment. You pushed him too much just so you could arrest him. So you might say, Lord Nrisingadev, is he entrapping Prahlad? He's pushing. Prahlad, ask for me. any benediction you like. A lot has to point out. Please, please, remember my background. Now, Lord Nrsingadeva is establishing for all eternity the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. Kunti Devi is asking for a benediction in terms of devotional service, just as Prahlad did. Let me always be your unconditional servant. We have no other relationship than that. So Kunti Devi is saying, please, I have a problem. I'm related to both the Pandavas and the Yadavas, the Rishis. It's not a win-win situation here. If you stay with the Pandavas, then the Rishis are bereft of your association. If you go back to the Rishis, if you go back to Dwarka, then the Pandavas are bereft of your situation, of your association. I'm related to both. What to do? Material life is full of such conundrums and puzzles. You can't have a clear-cut path of auspiciousness in material life. Someone is always shortchanged by your gain. Someone is always distressed by your happiness. There's nothing you can do about that, no matter how many welfare activities you do, no matter how many political, social arrangements you make, someone is always in and someone's always out. This was my conclusion after intense study at the university from the finest professors the world could offer. I said, there's no way out. It's not possible materially to benefit the world. You do this, and this group of people rises. But that group of people falls. You try to benefit everyone, someone feels repressed, someone feels put out of place. You try to address the rights of this disenfranchised group, and then you end up shortchanging another group. Where is the path of undiluted 100% auspiciousness for everyone? So Kunti Devi, of course, is not on the material platform. She's presenting what seems to be a material problem, but actually it's all about Krishna's devotees, because the Pandavas and the Rishis are all devotees. And she knows Krishna's equally related to both families. I don't want Krishna to go, but if he stays, then the other part of my family, the Rishis, they're shortchanged. So she's not in distress about material shortages and material scarcity. She's speaking from bhava. Because actually, as she knows, separation from Krishna is impossible. Everyone, all of Krishna's devotees, due to their constantly thinking of him, they'll always have Krishna's presence. Still, the bhava is pushing her. Krishna, don't go. And later in this chapter, her son, Yudhisthira, her eldest son, is going to step up and say, my dear Krishna, please just stay a few days longer. He's going to stop the Supreme Personality of Godhead from leaving by his love. And Krishna will agree to stay. So this is all the, these are all the loving affairs that are going on. Now, another point is that how is it that the Lord of the universe, the soul of the universe, personality of the form of the universe, can actually personally relate? Doesn't Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Tatami Damasarvam, Jagadavyakta Murtina, Matstani Sava Bhutani, Kacham Teshu Vashtita? He says, I'm spread everywhere in this universe, but then again, I'm not there. I pervade everything, but then again, I'm not there. Is this Krishna speaking double talk? Everything is me, then again, everything is not me. Everything rests on me. How can everything rest upon someone, and then the person says, but I'm not there? But, as Krishna explains, Paschimaya Yoga Maestro, this is his mystic power. This is yoga, not just silly physical postures. This is real yoga. Everything rests on me. I'm not there. So what does it mean when Krishna says he's not there? It means that Krishna is not bound up in the actions and reactions of the material cosmos. And at a deeper level, it means that Krishna is not there for the non-devotees. But for the devotees, he's there. Just like Hiranyakashipu challenged Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu took the position of an empirical scientist, research scientist. Prahlad, let's be scientific here. You're talking about a supreme being who's present everywhere. Okay, Prahlad, enter the laboratory. Look around. Do you see any supreme being? I don't see any supreme being. Who here sees any supreme being? Be scientific, Prahlad. Use your senses. Extend your senses through technology, through scientific instrumentation. Has anyone detected a god? Of course not. Of course, Prahlad was seeing the Srigadeva peeping out from the pillar, but Hiranyakashipu didn't see. So, Hiranyakashipu then, through his scientific research, came to the materialistic conclusion. Prahlad, you are speaking nonsense. We can see by the results of this research, there is no God. No one sees it. You can get a little subtle about that point because in the first chapter of the seventh canto, we learn that Hiranyakashipu did accept the existence of Vishnu, but he didn't want Vishnu meddling. He didn't want Vishnu bothering the demons, getting in the way of their plans. And in Hiranyakashipu's vision, Vishnu had overstepped the line when he killed his younger brother, Hiranyaksha. In other words, okay, there can be a Vishnu, but we don't follow him and he doesn't bother us. He stays in his neck of the woods, we stay in our neck of the woods. But what happened? The demigods paid off Vishnu. Like you manipulate a child with some sweets, the demigods swayed Vishnu into partiality. You see, that first chapter of the seventh canto explains that Hiranyakashipu and his demons accepted as a general proposition that Vishnu is impartial. But Hiranyakashipu was enraged. This impartial Vishnu has lost the plot. He's been bewildered by the demigods, he's given up his impartiality, and now he's interfering with our plans, so much to the extent he's killed my brother, who was doing innocent terroristic activities. Causing no problems at all. Yeah, upsetting the earth, but so what? Not just upsetting one country, but upsetting the whole earth. So what? Now Vishnu's killed him. That does it. He's abandoned his impartiality. We coexisted before. It was like in the old days, the one part of the world would coexist with the communist part of the world. Okay, Russia and the communist countries, you do your thing, we'll do our thing. We'll just try to coexist in a cold war. So that was kind of Hiranyakashipu and his fellows' attitude towards Vishnu. You exist, but we're not following you. We're not obeying you. Stay out of our life. We'll stay out of yours. That's the peace treaty. But the treaty was broken, and therefore Hiranyakashipu was enraged. I have to kill Vishnu. That will satisfy my brother. By killing Vishnu, that'll bring me peace, and it'll bring my brother peace. So that way, things proceeded. So, partiality of the Supreme Personality Godhead is an issue in the Bhagavatam. How is the Supreme Lord impartial yet partial? And Kunti Devi is also dealing with that issue. And she's asking, give me the benediction of cutting my ties. These are all devotees. her ties are spiritual. But she's looking at it in her Baba expression that I'm too attached. She's humble. I'm a woman, what can I understand? What do you mean, what can she understand? Krishna bowed to her and touched her feet. She's embracing him. What do I know about spiritual life? What kind of knowledge do I have? This is humility. So, some people may say that this is gender inequality. But just look, she's embracing the Supreme Personality of God. Meanwhile, she's saying, how can I understand the transcendental science? Great Gyanis, great Munis, they fail to get you. And what about me? What do you mean, what about her? Just see. Krishna, seeing her eagerly rushing toward him, gets up and approaches her. This is bhakti. This is the mystery of the Bhagavatam, which cannot be understood from the karmic platform. Why do we have a chance to understand this? Because of rendering devotional service. Vasudeva kata ruchi samaha sevaya vipra. By rendering service to the devotee of Krishna, you get the taste, kata ruchi, the taste for hearing the talks about Vasudeva, talks about Krishna. And you can begin to understand, because attitude is so important. The attitude you bring to the Bhagavatam, that allows you to enter within it or not. So she's asking, please cut the ties of my material affection. She has no material affection. Krishna himself admits that he hasn't cut off his family ties. Whom did he admit that to? After he disappeared from the gopis at the start of Rasa Lila, he returned. Why did Krishna return to their company? Because they were so intense in their feelings of separation. They were so distraught that this attitude, to say the least, this pure love brought Krishna back. This pure love the gopis demonstrated in separation ensured Krishna's return. And in fact, he told them that I actually wasn't completely away. I was watching, seeing your ecstatic symptoms of separation from me. So, when he rejoined them, and they sat down on the bank of the Yamuna, and they spread out their shawls for Krishna to sit on. That same Krishna, who is so difficult to be attained by the greatest yogis, they go through great difficulty to get darshan of Krishna sitting in their heart. That same Krishna sat down on the top pieces of the gopis, and they were massaging his feet and looking into his eyes. And the pure love was there, no question about that. But at the same time, a symptom of that pure love was some anger. Krishna, why did you do this to us? So they began to ask Krishna some tricky questions, trying to imply that Krishna is faulty in his execution of loving affairs. They wanted to do this very indirectly, because after all, Krishna is the life of their life. At the same time, he had left them. So they wanted to know, do you understand what you've done? All our personal traits come because we are part of Krishna. You can see even in ordinary relationships, when there's some disagreement, when there's some conflict between two persons, it always has to be established. Do you understand what you just did? Do you realize the impact, the implications of what you said? The other person has to be satisfied that the guilty person understands and admits, oh, I understand what I've done. I'm sorry. But if you say you're sorry without showing that you fully understand the damage you've done, it doesn't do any good. So we have that human tendency because we are part of Krishna and Janmadhyasata. The gopis wanted to see, does Krishna understand? Does he know what he's done to us? Does he understand there's been a problem he caused in executing these loving affairs? And so Krishna then defended himself. And he actually, according to the acharyas, he expressed, I know I did something wrong. I know that I did something regrettable. But you see, it wasn't all bad. What could I do? I wanted to see your ecstasy and separation. And also, I wanted to let the whole world see for all time that there are no greater devotees than you. I wanted to establish that. I wanted to see, I wanted that all the praying bhaktas, all the lovers of me, get to see that there has never been devotees like you. There are now, and there'll never be in the future devotees like you. So while begging for forgiveness and expressing his regrets, Krishna simultaneously explained his modus operandi. This is why I did it. I know I'm sorry. I caused you distress. There's nothing I can do to repay you for your devotion, even if I have the lifetime of the devas, even the lifetime of Brahma. There's nothing I can do. Please be satisfied with your own glories. Be satisfied with your own service. And just so everyone understands, in that statement to the gopis, Krishna said, our meeting here tonight has not a touch of the material energy. So in this way, Krishna explains many things at once. He told the gopis that you've given up all your family ties. You've given up all Kula Dharma, family Dharma, all principles of proper social living. You turned your back on that. Your husbands, your children, your brothers. You left your social standing, your social prestige, all that for me. And you did it at the drop of a hat. When Krishna played his flute, there was just no hesitation. You've done all this for me, joining me in the middle of the forest, in the middle of the night. Now, of course, this is no invitation for us to act irresponsibly in Krishna's service. And the gopis, while claiming not to have knowledge, were at the conclusion of all knowledge. As Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says, Vedaishta Sarvaya Rahameva Veda. By me, all the Vedas are pointing to me. Vedic knowledge means knowledge of me. So the gopis had Krishna. They had the conclusion of Vedic knowledge. And they were demonstrating that perfection of sarva dharma pratyaja. Abandon all varieties of subordinate dharmas and accept what is actual dharma. Come to me. So they demonstrated that. So Krishna congratulated them. You have done this in such an exemplary way that no one will ever surpass your surrender. But then he admitted something. You've left your families. I never left my family. I never gave up my mother or father. Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Balaram, my power boyfriends, I never gave them up. So now you can see why I'm truly indebted to you. You've done something even I haven't done. In this way, Krishna just stirring the loving ecstasies, making them sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And so what did the gopis think? We are wrong for implying that Krishna has some fault. That is our mistake. When actually Krishna is establishing His desire was to establish the glories of his devotees. We didn't see that. Now we see it. In this way, Krishna has made us indebted to him. So this is the relationship between Krishna and his pure devotees. Each one is dragging the other one deeper and deeper into the pool of Krishna praying. How can we repay Krishna? And Krishna's thinking, how can I repay you? The gopis are thinking, we falsely accused you. We didn't realize the whole picture. Now we see it. We see how now, not only have you made us indebted to you, but you purposely arranged that you would be indebted to us. Can you think about that? Krishna has arranged voluntarily that we, his devotees, are in such a situation that he is indebted to us. Just think of that. So when Ramananda Roy was describing this to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, okay, we have now arrived at a platform that is perfection. But you can go further. And Ramananda Roy was astonished. No one has ever asked me to go beyond this. So, these are the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're hearing about Kunti Devi and her relationship with Krishna. And, of course, the relationship of Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan is even more intimate and sweet. All right. Any questions? Any comments from Harisari Prabhu?
Just one small thought that I had. She's referring to the Lord of the universe and the soul of the universe, the form of the universe, and asking him to, you know, cut that tie of affection. That would indicate that those ties of affection are so powerful that only God himself can actually free us from them. Otherwise, that's what binds us to the universe. So only the Lord of the universe can actually remove them.
Yes. As Prabhupada says in the purport, the Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. It's amazing how even in this day and age where the nuclear family is disappearing, in many Western countries, there's a big divide between the conservatives who say, family, family, preserve the nuclear family, and the liberals who say, whether you are in favor of the family or not, it's gone. So let's just make social plans based on that reality. There's no point in arguing about the value of the family when the family is gone. So we now have to come up with what we're going to do in the absence of a nuclear family. The people have to have some form of organization. Obviously, the only way to go, then, to avoid complete social chaos, is everyone has as their primary relationship their relationship with the government. That's the only thing left. You'll get a computer number, and the computer number can lead to complete information about you, and you feel, through social benefits, through social support from the government, that's my family. So, even in this day and age of dissipation of the nuclear family, still people long for relationships. You go to any bookstore, and the bookshelves in the relationship section are just sagging under the load. How to have a relationship. How to say yes. How to say no. How to say what you really mean. People have so much trouble and they're so concerned with having relationships, even though the family is disappearing. So that shows you that this yearning for association with Krishna pervertedly manifests in the material world for a yearning for bodies that are close to you. your own skin, like Dhritarashtra pointed out in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. What are my men going to do? Those, especially my sons, my flesh and blood, what are they going to do? So the family is disappearing these days. Even in India, the traditions are corroding. I always point out at our retreat weekends, for 10 years ago when we started, it was very rare to find a case of boy and girl living together before marriage. Now, not common, not uncommon at all. So, in the, all over the world, the family structure is under attack. So, therefore, even political leaders who formerly thought twice about it, they're now saying, well, make your if you're going to let people be together however they like, same sex, different sex, whatever. In other words, hey, let's just face the realities. Yeah. We can't fight it. This is the way things are going on. So if you're a responsible politician, you have to accept the reality and work something out. That means the government has to become all-powerful and people depend on the government. This is what will be happening. And it's quite possible with all the computerization, all the IT, it's not a problem at all. Still, the conditioned soul longs for relationships. Still, the conditioned soul longs for bonding. And that impulse, as Hari Sarva Prabhu pointed out, is so powerful. It can only be dealt with by the Supreme Personality Godhead himself. And Kunti Devi, placing herself in the role of a conditioned soul, is begging for that mercy. I can't do it on my own. Please, Krishna, you do it for me. These family ties are so problematic. Even though my family members are all devotees, still, it's causing problems and partiality. The more we understand our weakness, the more we'll take shelter of Krishna. And so indeed, this body attachment is something that we must depend on Krishna to deal with. Anything else? No questions. Everyone's deep in thought. Yes?
I have one question, just not really related to the discussion with you, but you mentioned the separation of the Gopis and Krishna and so on. And I saw it makes me think about Gaura here. We have in our deities here, we have Gaura with the feather on his head. And I just wonder if that's supposed to be like that, or is he supposed to be without a feather because he's in the mood of Brahma Rama and separation?
How are you? Sorry, do you have any Prabhupada Vachas?
There was a lot of discussion about the topic of whether Lord Chaitanya should wear a peacock feather or not. I think the conclusion was that Prabhupada approved of it, and it was actually a standard that he introduced, so whatever the philosophical, back and forth was, the merits or demerits, ultimately he took the Acharya's opinion, and Prabhupada established that, so there's no problem for it.
Yes, that's the way. That's what I also remember. You can start arguing why do you name the Delhi deities Radha Partha Sarti? You can really start to get into those things.
I think it's that one.
Okay, please. That was your cue.
No, just there was a conversation when we were in Madras at the beginning of 1976, and the Chaitananda asked that question, that if Parthasarathi Bhakti means Krishna's on the chariot, then how can Radharani be there? So how can he ever have Parthasarathi? And Prabhupada said that wherever Krishna is, his internal energy is always with him. But simply when he's on the chariot, she's not manifest, but she's still always there. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that Parthasarathi is perfectly alright.
This is Krishna brain. And you can't pick it apart with your, you know, empirical detective analyses. Ultimately, this is what rules the world. Love of Krishna, and Krishna himself comes under that control of the pure love of his devotees. Therefore, he arranged that he would always be in debt to his dearmost devotees, and they realize that. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.